Fantastic, everyone. I am dark journalist Daniel List, and I'm here guest hosting the Alex Jones Show for InfoWars, and just fantastic. You know, when I was on the show last week, I mentioned to Alex that I always considered him an architect of the independent media. So it's a great honor to be here with you. And after hearing all these things about emergency powers in the first 2 hours, I have to emphasize that the whole drone scare that we witnessed for this whole period of the last couple of weeks, say 3 weeks, heavy, and it's been ongoing a lot in the background, is all about the same exact issue, which is emergency powers, emergency powers. When you hear them activate that emergency powers, it gives them a whole different slate of controls. And that's what we're going to get into here as well. And it's great also, I have to say, we can get into the UFO file and deal with issues of this depth and go that deep on them. It's very exciting. So for Alex to let me host the show is a great honor, and I appreciate it. One of the things I want to mention as well, there's been a lot of talk about continuity of government. The thing about continuity of government, it's not very well understood, and I'm going to get deep into it tonight. We've put a number of shows together at the Dark Journalist Show, putting together and outlining what continuity of government is. So we're going to become very familiar with some of these acronyms: COG, UFO, UAP, SSP. These are very crucial, and going into them, even PSYOP is again an acronym. So we're going to expand the meanings of what they are and how this all works together. But there's no question that we're in a moment of constitutional crisis when you see these things happening just before a new president-elect is sworn in on January 20th. Now, I have some breaking news in relation to this, which is the FAA has just announced that they are banning drones and authorizing the use of deadly force against drones over New Jersey. Now, this is a major breaking story. It just came out. And the FAA bans drones over parts of New Jersey, threatens deadly force for imminent security threats. So the FAA has got on board with this. The strange thing here for me when we're looking at this is that this gets rolled out, but it only lasts until January 17th. Now, it is major because it's the first major acknowledgement that the UFO file, you know, is active here, and that this drone threat, they're finally acknowledging it. I've seen a lot of things going on around the mainstream media kind of getting us out of the zone on this story in terms of the truth. And the independent media has missed the boat in a way, because they keep going along with this idea that, oh, they're planes or whatever. Well, I'm going to show you some examples as we get into this today of some of these drones that really look like planes. They're designed to look like planes. But when you see things as big as an SUV hovering over New Jersey, people from every walk of life look at that and say, I've never seen anything like that. We have multiple witnesses in relationship to this. So then we have to ask ourselves, what is the relationship of these emergency powers from continuity of government to something like a drone swarm from the skies? And what I'm going to lay out for you today is that we've seen this for a long time in the background being set up, which is a maximum threat from above and using a UFO threat narrative, which is something that the Central Intelligence Agency with the NSA and the NGA have been working in the background on to give us that threat narrative since 2017. And a funny little story that came out in the New York Times in 2017 that gave us this whole threat piece with whistleblowers who turned out to all be undercover counterintelligence agents. So that was not a very open process. And what you have when you get into this, you have to get really deep and say, you have the UFO file, the real thing, and then you have the false CIA narrative. The CIA narrative about the threat from the sky is what they're gathering and doing data mining on now. So we're going to get into that today, as well as SSP. And SSP, that acronym is the Secret Space Program. And even to imagine that they've been building a secret space program in the background seems quite fantastic. And yet, we have not been back to the moon since 1972. Well, that's a little unusual, don't you think? I mean, the whole program was built to set us up and put us into space. And now it's all privatized, and we have the likes of these independent groups going into space and NASA sort of standing there in a sideline role. These are all very unusual pieces as we get into this. And so when we look at groups that control this aspect and when we see what they're doing with the UFO threat, then we start to see, ah, They've been planning this in the background for a very long time. Now, one of the things I want to mention about NORTHCOM and COG and their relationship to the UFO file is there's a division. I'm going to reveal this today. There's a division here right inside the continuity of government program called Blue. That program, Blue, inside of COG is the UFO file, and this is an unlimited access, special access group. They go in and they work with the whole UFO file threat aspect. This is absolutely crucial because, you know, when you get into the constitutional issues around this, you're looking at a group like NORTHCOM, for example, which didn't even exist until the emergencies of September 11th, and it wasn't called into being until 2002. There's a good reason for that because we, in the Constitution and in our laws in America, we have something called posse comitatus, which says the feds can't run the people in the United States, that it's a police-oriented thing and you can't bring in the military. So, those laws have been standing up there since just after the Civil War and Reconstruction. So violating those laws becomes kind of their major goal in the middle of all this. So when we hear about things like martial law and totalitarian takeover and things, there's an actual process that they've built in with NORTHCOM on how to do that. So we're going to get into how that rolls out, who are the players involved, what's the historical aspect around it, and how it plays into current events here, which we're seeing on the ground in real time, live. And the drone threat, I can tell you from the things that I've heard from a number of different people on the ground, they have never seen the likes of this. So this becomes very important for us as we get into these various sightings and what they're doing with the UFO file, which, remember, is the highest secret in the national security state. And that was a physicist named Robert Sarbacher who put that on the record. And he said the secret aspect of this threat was above nuclear. So their secretive aspect and the groups that they have in place, one of those groups I refer to as X-Protect, they will apply lethal force, they'll destroy reputations, they'll change news stories, they'll put up front companies, whatever it takes to keep that secret of the advanced exotic technology residing inside the UFO file. It's a crucial aspect in the mix, and the drone story and the incredible arrogance of the people that are launching the drones through our skies gives us an opportunity to put an excellent spotlight on this with perfect timing. With the Trump administration coming in, there's no question that these two things are, in fact, related. I want to mention something else here in relation to InfoWars and all the coverage that Alex did around the shootings and the attempted assassinations of President Trump. Assassinations are a very interesting part of our American history. Of course, so the JFK assassination is something that researcher Professor Peter Dale Scott refers to as the first deep state revolt against the White House. This is very important because we need to understand why that deep state needs that control and why assassination is their crucial weapon. In the case of the JFK assassination, we also need to see that there's been a UFO file aspect hiding beneath that story for 61 years. That's why those records have been so sat on by the intelligence agencies, and they have not wanted them to come out. And this is the crucial aspect of it because, of course, they were ordered in 1992 by Congress to release them in 25 years. That would have been October 26, 2017. When we look at the JFK assassination, we can see the outline of what was going on here. They were building an entire infrastructure for controlling things on the ground from space. And a big kind of wedge in their plans is, you know, Kennedy comes in with all of this knowledge around the UFO file, and he is someone who, through, for example, Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, fellow Catholic and his best friend, who actually brought him to Berlin after the war, he's controlling the MJ-12 file. So, you know, the whole aspect there of Forrestal controlling that and then sharing that with Kennedy, of course, he shared a fate very similar to JFK, but it happened in 1949. Remember, Forrestal was the first defense secretary. He was logged into Bethesda Naval Hospital supposedly for depression and unfortunately ended up flying out a window there, 13th floor. It's very important to note that when you get around the UFO file, the list of mysterious deaths reads just like the list of mysterious deaths around the JFK assassination or some of these other deep events like 9/11 and others. Of course, even, you know, Watergate and the Epstein aspects, all of them have their various death lists. And this is a way of removing witnesses who may get you into trouble later when it comes down to any type of DOJ action. I do think that it's important for us to note in this period of time that the pledge by Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., with President Trump in August when he joined the campaign and threw his entire support behind Trump, which is a crucial, crucial moment in this campaign and for 2024 in general. When that took place and they got up there and pledged to release the JFK files, this was a huge earthquake and the ripples went straight back to the deep state. And this is a real problem for the deep state because they're looking at this and they're saying, there's Trump with his deep knowledge and his attempt, remember, during Trump 1, the first administration, to create the Space Force. And people still don't quite grasp just how important that Space Force development was. But ever since the days of Eisenhower, this advanced technology, a UFO file, has been out of the hands of the executive branch. And there have been attempts. Kennedy made an attempt by dissolving the CIA, which was what he was trying to do. That was an attempt to pull that secret information back under the executive branch where it belongs. And instead, we've had a succession of presidents, and the only ones who've gotten anywhere close to it, I'd say, are Carter and Reagan until Trump with the Space Force. And I think one of the important things that they did with Trump is they recognized very early on, and this may be why all of the trouble, you know, sometimes you have to look for what's the root of the trouble in relation to these political battles, because we've seen political battles in the past, but we have never seen anything like the kind of vitriol that they've had for President Trump. Well, why is that? Well, is it because he's a loudmouth political guy, he's a real estate boss and TV personality? Or is it because in his own background, we have, again, this signature of exotic technology and the UFO file through the figure of his uncle, John Trump, Professor John Trump at MIT. I remember going over to MIT, which is close by here, and getting the files on John Trump. And it's quite interesting because most of that information is gone. But John Trump was a very key player, deep, deep in that American establishment of black projects. And very often, you know, it's mused about why is Trump talking about his uncle in all these interviews? Well, there's a good reason. Of course, it was President Trump's uncle who was called in to give an exact overview of Nikola Tesla's papers and those papers relating to an advanced technology. And that information, which he was sent in by a character named Vannevar Bush, who was the dean of MIT, becomes the untold story in the background of Trump and the various issues that are going on there. So when you were looking at Tesla's information, he's developing this X technology in the background, and the government is tapping in, and they're saying, what's going on with this information? We need to track this guy. And, you know, when he dies suddenly, they want to send in somebody that they can really trust on the inside who's familiar with the advanced exotic technology program. Well, that was John Trump. And the person who sent him in, that figure, Vannevar Bush, not only was he the dean of MIT, but he was in charge of the UFO file. So John Trump was his protege. So there's no question that there's a connection there. That's something that we brought forward a number of years ago. And one of the reasons I bring it forward is I think it's a crucial aspect when you're looking at Trump, because this technology has gone underground and it represents an amazing leap for all of the different industries in America, including energy. But in particular, the things that they were looking at with Tesla's information was weaponry. And when it comes to the UFO file, there's something deep, deep in that UFO file. There's a property called apothium. I'm going to spell it out for you. It's APOTHEUM. That apothium is what you hear about whenever there is a UFO sighting or an encounter. You have all these people reporting things. What do they report? They report missing time. Well, time goes missing. Well, some of them report, the aspects get really deep. And I remember speaking to Professor John Mack over at Harvard, who was a leading advocate around this, and he died mysteriously in 2005. But before he did, he told me that there were a number of things associated with the UFO file. When people would be abducted and things of this nature, they would go through things. Well, that defies physics completely. So does missing time. Another aspect, of course, around the UFO file is when these crafts land, nothing anywhere will grow for miles around. That's very unusual. So what it is, you have a reality distortion physics. That's the thing that they're tracking deep there in the background. That's why Professor Trump was involved with Tesla's papers. That's the same technology resides in the same place, and that is in the deep UFO file. And I'm going to show you how that file has occasionally been brought to the surface at times, as these breakaway groups that have the technology now sense the need to break back in and to come back and reintroduce some of this technology, but with a story, which is, oh, you know, we've been fighting this UFO threat for you, but don't worry, we need those emergency powers to do that. So that's that is the nature of it. And I'll tell you, when it comes to John Trump, the last thing I'll say around this is, now we have President Trump and RFK Jr. They're both in the government and both have the deep knowledge and the deep background on a family level with that UFO file. So there's no question about it. That is the biggest threat to the deep state. So the idea that we have even the hint of a threat from the skies aspect before these guys get in is absolutely telling. And there's no question in my mind that when we get into this Trump-Kennedy overlay, it is that connection. Because remember, President Kennedy came in very much like Trump did. He was independently wealthy. He had the connections on his own. He didn't need the connections of that deep state system. And he also had a vision of freedom, and he also had great knowledge behind the UFO file. It's funny because I mentioned Secretary Forrestal, who, you know, had taken Kennedy under his wing and shared this information with him. Well, there's a number of different aspects when it comes to Kennedy and Trump that overlap in this department. That's the nature of the trouble. And I know that there have been a lot of speculations about the JFK assassination relating to the mafia and Cubans and things of this nature. I just want to say, the idea of having no answer from the government 61 years later, except the ridiculous lone gunman aspect, is very important about the type of reality that we're living in, because that is a fragmented, disconnected piece. The question is, what could be so terrible that you would hide it for 61 years? The answer is, this is an aerospace group, and their plan all along has been to control things from above with advanced technology. That's where you get a big response from someone like Trump with Space Force. And that development of that space program in the background is something Kennedy warned about. That's when and the actual program was called Blue Gemini at the time. And that's when Kennedy actually sent people directly to NASA. It was Defense Secretary McNamara. And he said to him, look, go in there to NASA and say, we don't have two programs, a public one and a private one. We have one public space program. I don't know what this other thing is, but if you don't get rid of it, I'm going to kick it back to the military. That's a document that came out in 2014 without a lot of fanfare, because I don't think people understood the nature of the secret space program, because there's been a lot of fluff and there's been a lot of science fiction about these types of things. But in fact, the secret space program does exist, and it recalls a whistleblower who came forward, the NASA hacker Gary McKinnon. One of the interesting things, if you go back to that story, it's from 2003, right around the time of all the incredible repression of 9/11. But McKinnon is very important because he is from the UK, and he hacked into NASA, and he saw a series of different files. And one of those files said off-world officers lists, and it was related to the UFO file. So we had a group of officers, not astronauts, nothing we've ever heard of, but an off-world officers list. So it was very interesting. The United States said, we want to get him. We want to extradite this guy. And there's actually a very famous press conference of Prime Minister Cameron with President Obama. And it gets brought up, you know, what's going to happen with this guy McKinnon? You know, what are you going to do with him? And Obama is like, you know, we'll go through the right channels, but we're going to get this guy. And it was very much an Assange situation. They didn't end up getting him. In fact, he, as a result of Asperger's, they weren't able to extradite him. So it was just a fluke that they didn't get their hands on him, but they wanted to. This guy released something which is a very major secret inside of the national security state, and that was the secret space program. This private development of space, completely off the books, a part of a black budget program, is a crucial missing aspect in our understanding of geopolitics and plays directly into the continuity of government program. In the next segment, I'm going to go into that COG Northcom development and how we got into all this. I also want to say that these developments around the public airing of the whole UAP thing in Congress are very controlled and don't give us the real story around the UFO file at all. As a matter of fact, you have a lot of Congress people sort of hanging out there who don't know anything about the subject. That's the nature of the problem. And then they can have these counterintelligence agents come in and just flim-flam them with every kind of different story and saying, I have 30 whistleblowers over here, 40 guys over there. But in fact, when you dig into the history of the people who were supposedly the whistleblowers, they're still counterintelligence agents working for the government. This is the nature of the problem. That aspect, if the right transparency is brought to it, will be a complete upheaval, a gigantic volcano in the middle of this political situation. It's starting to happen. The word is starting to get out, but the public still only understands a fraction because of what we're hearing from false groups in Congress and other places related to this. Those hearings, in fact, are part of the biggest sham, and will release false programs as we put out the real thing. They're going to release things and say, like, for example, in November, they said, oh, there was this program called Immaculate Constellation. Well, that program turned out to be a complete farce. But they, you know, stood up there before Congress, and Congress made a big deal out of it. So the CIA will make up things to mimic and caricature the real thing. And in the next segment, I'm going to go into what the nature of the blue program is. That's the real UFO secret space program, and how that relates to all the strange things that we're seeing going on here. It's a pleasure to be here with the InfoWars audience for the Alex Jones Show. And we're going to go to commercial. When we come back, Northcom, Northcom, and more Northcom. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Of course, I put together some images up there on Dark Journalist at X, and so you can follow along.
I've got a question and also a comment here for Dark Journalist Daniel List. Daniel, you nailed it about this being a War of the Worlds 2.0 psychological operation. And after we did our shows and after I issued an emergency warning to Trump to get a briefing on this and find out that it indeed was the Pentagon under Biden's orders, that they would start backing off the hysteria real quick. And as soon as Trump did that, we saw Kirby from the Pentagon, and we saw Biden and others come out and say, okay, this is no big deal. We know who they are. We know where they're coming from. They're not dangerous. When they had said, we don't know where they're coming from, but it's not foreign governments, but it's not us, but it's not dangerous, we really saw about a 170, not a pure 180 on that, because they never answered, okay, well, if you don't know who they are, but now you do know who they are, but they're not a threat, well, then why are they harassing U.S. military bases? That's clear compartmentalization, so there's a bigger story there. But just notice that since we really exposed this, and the fact that you don't use drones to snoop for radiation, that's ground-based systems are the best. And since all the experts came out and agree with that, they've now kind of pulled back on this, at least for now, and have moved on to the new pandemic and the declarations of emergency and all the rest of it. It's also in their different WEF globalist documents how they use viruses, the threat of viruses, to bring in their global corporate government. So my big question is, how big was it when Trump came out and called their bluff last week and then earlier this week? And what do you expect the deep state and the different factions to do now? And just give me your response to how amazing it was, in my opinion, when they did that 170 just as soon as Trump came out and called them on their crap. Thanks.
Wow, an excellent question. And I have to say that Alex nailed it there, which is there's a huge tone shift as soon as President-elect Trump came out and said the government knows exactly where these things are, where they're being launched from, and they were returning to. And he said, I can't imagine it could be the enemy. So therefore, it pointed it directly back to the government itself as being the ones who were launching this. Now, I think that there was a lot of data mining taking place in the advent of the first few weeks of this. However, a story that goes all the way back to December of 2023 came out in the Wall Street Journal as late as November of this year, and it was all about how these drones had swarmed for days Langley Air Force Base, which is an extraordinary thing, and that the drones were at first just identified as UAP. So literally, you have a UFO swarm around this base. Now, you had the retired NORTHCOM commander come out and give an article in the Wall Street Journal about this. And when they're referring to him, they're referring to him as the actual commander, which is odd because the actual NORTHCOM commander, COG combatant commander, and NORAD, remember that's all one position, NORAD commander, COG combatant commander, and the NORTHCOM commander. General Geo was sworn into that post in April of this year, and Van Herk, who had a very heavy, heavy UFO fingerprint in his background, including being part of the 509th group. The 509th group, yeah, there's a few generations that go back there, but the 509th is the same group that was the only one capable of dropping the atomic bomb during World War II, but they're the ones who discovered the Roswell wreckage. So suddenly, you saw the guys at the top of Space Force and the guys at the top of NORTHCOM, and they all had this signature in their background of having this background of closely associating with the UFO file, and it also goes for General Geo. In Geo's case, he has addressed the UAP thing saying, oh, there are thousands of incursions at our border every year. Well, that seems quite extraordinary. I guess NORAD or NORTHCOM isn't doing their job if there's thousands of incursions. We also have to remember this takes place under this umbrella of a kind of a fantasy that NORAD doesn't know is flying in the skies, just like with the Chinese balloon. And Van Herk, General Van Herk with the 509th Roswell connection was in charge at that point. And he rambled up to the microphone and said, well, it could be extraterrestrial. We just don't know. That was, again, setting in these subconscious layers. And he put that out there on purpose. And all the newspapers picked up at the time, all the websites, everything picked up. This is what the NORTHCOM commander had to say, that this could be extraterrestrial. And it's very easy for him to dance with that statement and say, well, it could be. Well, it could be anything, right? But this idea that they're suddenly just discovering how to look at balloons or drones is ridiculous. We've had the most sophisticated air defense system anywhere ever, especially since World War II. This idea that balloons could get away with floating in our skies, well, there are military laws on the books that don't allow balloons anywhere near the coast of the United States, and that dates back to the Japanese floating over poisonous bombs and actually killing people in the Pacific Northwest. So they have rules against that already. They don't need to adjust their sensors so they can start to see things. Look, this entire structure was set up to fight a nuclear war. Do you think they're going to let things in their skies that they don't know what they are? Especially something like a drone, which has the capacity of the size of twice an SUV. No. So this is all fantasy stuff. And when Kirby comes up to the microphone and says, oh, there's nothing illegal going on, those are all very, very gaslighting statements, but they show you a kind of level of danger involved in this. And it's very interesting because now what we have more than them flying over regular metropolitan areas like they were doing heavily for 3 or 4 weeks, now what you have is specifically military bases. So they just over Dallas, there was one, mysterious drones reported. This story just came out this morning over a major military base there. When we look at these different incursions over time, they would never be allowed, but here they are, you know, swarming around. There's a very interesting genesis when you get back on this, which is there are a series of nuclear bases that had UFO incidents, and this goes back 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, you name it. And the ability of the UFOs to turn off the missiles is on record, and a number of the people who worked at the bases have come out about this. In fact, it is General Chance there from the Space Force, the commander of the Space Force, who was at one of these bases for 5 years. He worked at that Montana base where this took place. So when we first got the first reports around the Chinese balloons and the things that were happening there, that was all related, again, to, Montana, And so Montana was a central piece of this. Montana and Oregon seem to be the place that they go to when they get into these stories about nuclear incidents around UFO bases. But they've had that, and as a matter of fact, there was a major incident that, and this goes all the way back to the Kennedy administration, where a UFO had flown over a Soviet nuclear base. And so Kennedy has a directive, if you go back into the record, on November 12th, 1963. That's 10 days before he was assassinated. And the directive itself says to the CIA director, John McCone at the time, because he had fired Dulles, and he said, what I want you to do is share with me all the high-threat UFO cases because I want to prepare to share them with Khrushchev, the leader of the Russians. And at that point, you can see that this is the bridge too far with President Kennedy. But there's a strange crisscross here with our deep state and what goes on around the UFO file, because whenever our leaders get around the situation where they want to deal with the Russians one-on-one about the UFO file, they run into all kinds of strange obstacles. And that tells us a great deal about the groups that are stopping them from getting together. Never mind our antagonisms, you know, with Russia or whatever it happens to be. Those leaders getting together is a crucial thing. So if Trump and Putin can sit down and work this out, well, they can work out a number of things on the world stage. However, if they get together and they talk about the UFO file, that deep state structure goes bananas because they're losing that control over it. So you'll notice there's a series of different meetings that the leaders have. This happened with Reagan and Gorbachev and with Kennedy and Khrushchev, where they say, we don't want the State Department or the CIA involved. We want just to have the translator. And in Reagan's case, when he was there with Gorbachev, Gorbachev tells the story in 2014 at the New York Press Club that Reagan sits him down, looks straight in his eyes and says, there's a UFO threat. If they attack us, will you help us? And Gorbachev said he was absolutely serious. And the people in the room who were State Department officials and, you know, Charlie Rose, people like that, are absolutely gobsmacked when Chairman Gorbachev says this. Gorbachev went on the record with it because he knew it was crucial, because they decided at a point in the 1980s to have this SDI, Star Wars Defense, in America. And they needed to explain it to the Russians as, no, this isn't something where we're going to come and bomb you. This is our UFO defense system. Now, it's interesting because President Trump has talked about installing a missile shield exactly like SDI, because in Reagan's era, they couldn't do it. In fact, they did have some successes with this in the Reagan era, and Reagan himself was taken aside by a deep black project scientist named Norm Berggren, who wrote a book called The Ringmakers of Saturn, and they showed him various video of these craft hovering in the rings of Saturn. And once they showed him that, then Reagan starts peppering all of his speeches with, we need to get together because there's an alien threat, how much that would unite us and all the rest. If you look into Colin Powell's autobiography, when he's talking about working with Reagan, he says, you know, the amount of times I was the guy who rubbed out and erased all those comments that Reagan made about the UFO file and aliens during these speeches, and I missed that one, you know. So he sort of chides himself in the book for missing that particular thing. There's another famous incident, of course, with Reagan, which I always found fascinating, when he's sitting there with Steven Spielberg in the White House, and Spielberg shows him the movie E.T., and then Reagan stands up afterwards, after everyone's seen the debut of this movie, and says, we all know in this room that this is not fiction. This is real life. So Reagan was very, you know, clued in on this. But I think what they did on the CIA side is they profiled him as they had profiled other presidents before him and said, you know, this guy, we need to give him the it's for America, that these things are a threat and we need to build up the secret program in the background. That gave them the ability to create a secret space program. And Kennedy's program, which was still surviving through the Challenger era, because, you know, when Challenger was up, that's still a manned space program. Well, when they destroyed Challenger and blew it out of the sky in 1986, that's the end of the Kennedy program. You know, Kennedy's were going to the moon, not because it's easy, but because it's hard. And this whole piece, you know, it's very interesting if you get into that, because when they get rid of Challenger, that's the end. And we have this other thing, this amorphous thing about, hey, there's a probe on Mars, there's a probe here, there's a probe there, but there's no more manned space program. And all that takes us into Artemis. And Artemis is the program that NASA is launching to put people back on the moon. Well, hey, it's 52 years later. What'd you do in between? What was going on? And I always hear, whenever there's historical breakdowns of this, they're terrible. You know, the Neil deGrasse Tyson types are just completely uninformed on it, or they've been fed pablum. But what happens is they'll say, well, they didn't have the money for it. Look into the history of Apollo. The next three missions, all through 1976, were paid for. They were already funded. They already had spent the money on the personnel, built up the apparatus for it, and they were going, you know, they were going to the moon regularly at that point. So when we think about this, those explanations don't make any sense. So what happened to the space program? It went into a covert space program. That's what the whole SSP aspect is. And then you got these guys privatizing. And Bigelow Aerospace was a major piece of this. And it's very interesting because Bigelow is, he's sort of like a space Trump in a way, because he's a guy who has all these hotels and things. He wants all of this tourist spots in space. And, but he's also right in the heart of Las Vegas, and his organization is majorly involved on the political scene. He was one of the top funders in the 2024 Republican primaries, and he was funding DeSantis from Florida. So, you know, these people move. There's UFO money throughout the political system, and the more we put those things together, the more we're going to get a clearer vision of the truth. You know, I always say one of the major problems is that the people who understand the deep state don't understand the UFO file, because they regard them all as fringe or whatever they happen to be. And the UFO file people don't know how to research on the level that the deep state people do. You know, the deep state people understand government assassinations. They understand the background on these things. They know how to look at the various geopolitical influences. And that's something that the UFO researchers don't know how to do. They're just lacking in that one regard. But I would say this, that the UFO researchers have one huge advantage. They know there's a UFO file, and that is the breakaway technology. It's the X technology sitting in the middle of all this. There's a reason why it's called SpaceX, by the way, because this whole definition of X came about through Guy Bannister, and Bannister, in fact, was the person who worked in the FBI hunting down all those cases in the Pacific Northwest of crafts that had crashed down. So it's a weird thing when you see the overlays of history, because Bannister shows up very deep in the UFO file later around the JFK assassination, and he's running Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. So, you know, it's very interesting. If you go into the history of people like Jim Garrison and others who prosecuted the JFK assassination, they're looking at some of these people and they're saying, well, you know, what is this about NASA and the UFO file that has anything to do with this case? They don't understand it. And they start to get suspicious after a while. And it's very interesting. If you read some of the bios around Jim Garrison, his ultimate conclusion that it was the aerospace wing of the military-industrial complex that took out Kennedy, and for the reason of they were protecting something. And the thing that they were protecting is this exotic technology piece. And I tell you, we haven't moved the needle one bit from those 61 years between the Kennedy assassination, other deep events like Watergate, Iran-Contra, and Northcom's takeover after 9/11. We're still behind this secrecy, this wall of secrecy. That wall of secrecy is not cracked except on a few occasions. And I think, again, that that handshake between Kennedy, RFK Jr., and Trump during the Arizona event is one of those ripples that, if it carries into the administration, if they're able to bring it forward, then this is dramatic. And I do want to say this on the historical record in terms of JFK. A lot of people have said to me, well, look, you know, the CIA would never leave anything that's incriminating to them in their own records. Come on, you know, if those records don't mean anything. No, there's a reason that they've sat on those records. I'm going to tell you what it is, which is the records in the Kennedy case were originally handled and set up 4 hours after the assassination by Robert Kennedy, the attorney general. This is crucial. He called John McCone in to meet him at a farm in Virginia and said, you know, I'm installing this piece into your reporting on it. If it ever comes out, it's going to ring all these bells and whistles off in the Justice Department. So there's something sitting in those files. And remember, famously, when Trump was supposed to release them in that period in 2017, October 26, which was the 25-year deadline set by Congress, he he was not able to release them fully. He came out with some of the biggest, he divulged some of the biggest secret files, but he did not let them out fully. And part of that reason was Mike Pompeo came to him and said, you can't do this, the leader of the CIA. And he was giving him all these different various reasons. And so Trump didn't do it. And at the end of his administration, Judge Napolitano, of course, that libertarian judge that people know so well and has a lot of integrity, he had a relationship with Trump. It was kind of a back and forth relationship. But he called him after the after the election loss in 2020 and said, why don't you release the records on the way out? You said you would. And Trump said, no, I can't do it. I can't do it. And Napolitano, the way he tells it, it's very interesting. And this is something we've highlighted on my show. He said, well, why not? You can't treat the American public like children. Why wouldn't you let this out? It's crucial. You know, the assassination of a president at 60 years later. And Trump said, Andrew, you don't understand. If you saw what was in those files, you couldn't let them out either. Do you understand? So Napolitano said, I don't know what it was. And Trump also said, I'll tell you at some point, you know, but not when there's 30 people listening to me like there are in this phone call right now. So Trump knew, he understood that there's a deep state secret hanging there deep in the background. He may have even used it as a card in some of his deep state poker matches that have gone on here, including them trying to land him in prison, kill him, or otherwise. One of the other things I want to mention about the deep state activities is I consider it a deep event, the raid on Mar-a-Lago and the things that they were looking for. Now, there are these stories back there that one of the things that they sent John Trump in was to get this actual device, advanced device that Tesla had developed. And the way that John Trump tells it at the end of his life in one of his own video interviews, and I have about 12 hours of video of him. And what he says is, well, the FBI, they weren't looking for a death ray, actually. What they sent me in there for, they were looking for an object, a device that Tesla had created, which took down flying objects at a distance. So when we think about this and think about the whole thing about unidentified flying objects, this was in fact kind of the UFO killer. And that's the thing that they wanted, because they were already being bedeviled by the whole aspect of the UFO file, both the UFO file on the inside and then this other stuff that they're looking at on the outside that they don't know what it is or how to deal with it. And again, when you're dealing with the UFO file, you could be dealing with an extraterritorial group, a group that's developed this technology here, or you could be dealing with something off-world, or you could be dealing directly with this breakaway pattern inside the government that has some kind of quasi-corporate political move. You have to look to those sources, and you can't get locked in too dramatically to any particular thing. I said, once in a while I hear people say, well, there's no, you know, it's not aliens. It's just all us. It's the government trying to scare people. Well, the government is aware more than anyone about the UFO file. They've been collecting that data for, I think, 100 years at least. And the information goes back all the way into our own ancient history. This is a major, major problem. And the idea of handing over the reins of the human origin story, as it were, to the Central Intelligence Agency or DARPA or people of this ilk is not a good, healthy idea, because they will just spin it out as, you know, their version of history. And this gets us into a deep, deep aspect around all this, which I'll get into in the next segment, which is how old and how advanced is the technology. And I'll ask the guys here to show a couple of the things that I posted up on my X account, which are interesting graphics that might give us some idea of what it is exactly that we're talking about in relation to the UFO file. Of course, you're watching us here on InfoWars, and this is Daniel List from The Dark Journalist here speaking to you on The Alex Jones Show. A great honor to be here, and of course, I highly recommend everyone's support Alex Jones and his mission here. I've always considered Alex a great architect of independent media, and now so much of that independent media has become part of the mainstream, although they've been fighting it and trying to co-opt it in different ways. And, you know, there's great voices out there around all of this, you know, like Joe Rogan or Tucker Carlson or whatever, but Alex has been there doing it the longest, and he really is the architect of all this. Get behind him and get behind the work, especially since his work has been so persecuted. There, Exhibit one. I've got, I think, 15 different ones up there. This one's very important. That is actually NORTHCOM headquarters, which, right in Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado. And it's very interesting because you have a piece, one of the beams of 9/11 of the Twin Towers right there. And around it, it's very interesting. It's one of the beams going through a globe. It's interesting imagery that they put together here. And the fact that they merged NORTHCOM in with all their space operations and NORAD and all that all comes out of the 2002 Cheney-Bush aspect. This was the ultimate goal that they had after all, which was controlling things on the ground from space. And the vehicle, as it were, the destruction during 9/11, gave them the ability to create NORTHCOM. NORTHCOM gave them the ability to create a COG combatant commander who would hold the reins of NORAD, NORTHCOM, and COG. That's the big play if you go back in that history and you look at the piece along here, because we look at Rumsfeld as well, and his big obsession was developing a weapons platform in space that could deliver weapons here with pinpoint accuracy. And that included the so-called Rods of God technology, which can deliver incredible devastation and leave no after effects, no fallout. This is crucial for how they do things and how we look at all of this. Now, you know, I hope that a nuclear weapon or Rods of God or whatever it happens to be never gets used. But I think it's important for us to understand the stakes and the potential blackmail that goes on in relation to this. And one of the things that we know between Russia and NORTHCOM, there is this kind of push-pull, because Russia itself, with its great satellite technology, they know a great deal about what took place, for example, during 9/11. And we're going to get into that in the second half of the program here coming up. It's great to be here with you on InfoWars. And again, we're going to have a great time in the next half hour. Hey everyone, it's great to be back with you here on InfoWars and for the Alex Jones Show. Just fantastic. We're going deep, deep now into the UFO file in a way that you don't hear anywhere, even in independent media. This is deep, and you're learning about what could be in relation to the UFO file and the continuity of government program. How do those emergency powers get rolled out? And, you know, the street legend name for this was always Blue Beam, as it were. And there are real details around Blue Beam that go back to a particular person inside the UN who was seeing them develop these scenarios. And I have a number of think tank documents where they game out the scenarios of what would happen if we had this, you know, whole piece about people living with the idea of an ET reality. The government has been gaming that out since the 1940s. And so they have a great deal of information from you, your parents, your grandparents, your great grandparents. This is an intergenerational wave. And we have our own relationship with these mysteries as well. Remember, that has nothing to do with the government and what they choose to tell us or not tell us. That's crucial, because there's a great deal of information that independent researchers have brought forward. And, you know, humanity, it's an interesting thing. I've noticed this as well, which is, you know, for example, if someone out there has seen a crashed craft with a dead alien in it, and he's a general somewhere, and he thinks he's keeping it super secret, on subconscious level, we're all connected up, and we all know the same thing. And it's very interesting if you get into some of the deeper mystical aspects around this. You know, we're all sort of plugging into these different towers, and we can all ping that information that they've seen as well. So it's not just about what the government will disclose, which very often is not the real thing. One of the things that I wanted to show is just how far back this goes. And one of the things that I posted on X, and I put it in my documentary. The documentary is called JFK, The Final Speech, and it's all about the Antarctica UFO file and Apotheum. One of the things that I put in there was this painting by an artist whose name was Charles Delschau. He came from Germany, in fact, and he came over here to spy in the 1850s on a group called the Sonora Aero Club. And a group in Germany who was dealing with aeronautics early on, before the Wright brothers, before all this, put this painting, Delschau put this painting together, which was uncovered, and it's been in galleries now since the 1970s. But he drew it. He painted this in 1903. And right in the middle of it, we can see clearly it shows amidst his drawings of these various air vehicles, the arrows, as he called them, we see the name Trump dead center there right above that. And then in the right hand corner, we see the number 45 and then 99. What's quite fascinating, because of course Trump was the 45th president of the United States, now will be the 47th president. But here we have Trump 45 in a painting from over 100 years ago by someone who was looking at the very early aspects of these aero groups. So the idea of this aerospace piece being connected intergenerationally is very important. I also would say there's a predictive aspect that goes on here, because here we have them rolling out that they know Trump will be the 45th president and somehow related to the airship idea and aspect. And of course, we've had Trump, who developed Space Force and now is working with SpaceX and others. So he's very deeply connected with that. But his uncle, directly now a protege of Vannevar Bush. And Bush was the top on the UFO file. He managed it. So if John Trump was his protege, he knew all about the UFO file. There you can see the 45 and the 99 is after it. The 45 is clear what that means. The 99 opens up a greater mystery, in my opinion. But Trump and 45, it's undeniable. The various ships that they drew, you know, it's kind of unusual fashion of painting as well. It's almost like some of the stuff are things that he's seeing that he's trying to bring to light. And Del Shao is an unusual character. There's a whole group of people and authors who look into his work and are trying to sift out and bring forward that information. One of the things I will say about this is in the next segment, we'll get deep into it, and we'll see you around the other side.
My fellow patriots, there are a lot of amazing Patriot gear, supplements, you name it, at thealexjonesstore.com. But we've now added a whole bunch of other really cool items. There are a bunch of amazing campaign coins for InfoWars, for 1776, for the fight for liberty on the site as low as $9.99. Some of the challenge coins are $14.97. They're great fundraisers for us. They have a lot of weight in them. They look great. They're great conversation starters, great gifts, great keepsakes, mementos, and you know that you've supported the InfoWar. So I want to thank you all for your past support and encourage you now to go to thealexjonesstore.com, our amazing sponsor that will keep us on air one way or the other. If InfoWars get shut down, that's okay, because they're a great sponsor. They're not owned by me, and the bad guys won't be able to shut down thealexjonesstore.com. So go there for the campaign coins and so much more today, and keep me in the fight. Thank you so much for your support.
The program leftists failed to silence. It's the Alex Jones Show.
Well, we're going deep, deep today to see what these emergency powers are all about, really. I'm Daniel List, the dark journalist, going deep here with you on the Alex Jones Show. We were looking at some arrows there that were drawn by Charles Del Shao, predicting Trump coming in as the 45th president. It's quite unusual. There is a fascinating, and I mean fascinating, correlation to this. And again, when you get around aerospace, there are these incredible predictions. But one of the very interesting ones comes from the father of our rocket program, Wernher von Braun. And in his Mars Project, which was a scientific book that he put out, there's two different ones. There's Project Mars and the Mars Project. But there are these sci-fi tales that have people going into different planets and all the rest. And von Braun in there indicated that when we colonized Mars, that what happens is we set up something called these different leaders that take over and serve 10-year terms. And the leader that he referred to was called Elon. Now, that's in a book in 1948 from Wernher von Braun. And then we have this obsessed with Mars and, you know, the owner of X and SpaceX and all the rest of it, Elon Musk, with that kind of unusual name, I would say. How do we put that together? There's a predictive aspect, again, when you get around aerospace. You're not just dealing with nuts and bolts, and that's why you see people as diverse as Aleister Crowley, L. Ron Hubbard, and all these different kind of occult figures over time. Over and over again, they are showing up very unusually in the middle. And in the case of Jack Parsons, who was a student of Crowley's, who was really the original father of our rocket program. Parsons is sending off rockets, and he's going to, of all places, in 1932, Roswell, New Mexico, with Goddard and his different funders setting off these various rockets. And it's quite fascinating to me because when you look at the influence that Crowley had on him, Crowley was our master, and I mean our master, black magician in the 20th century. There's no getting around it. And the fact that Parsons was so close to him and that space was so important and the occult signature of space was so important gives us again the hint that you're dealing with something more than just this kind of, you know, oh, how much G-force does a UFO carry? Those things are fascinating. There's no question about it. And they can outperform anything that we have. You know, there's no question about it. If we recover craft along this line and we try to redevelop it, it's still kind of difficult. As a matter of fact, I have a picture up on Twitter. Maybe they can pull it up. That is the Kelvin UFO out of Scotland. This is a very important picture because it was released, and I have the negative of this, so there's no chicanery around the picture. It was released by the Ministry of Defense, and it was captured in 1990 and suppressed until 2022. This picture, which shows a plane tracking a huge, and I mean a huge UFO, is quite remarkable. And the story behind this that I've been able to get and glean from different whistleblowers and others is that what you're actually seeing taking place there is the plane trying to guide and direct this UFO, because we still, at that point in 1990, did not have complete mastery of this technology. And they were trying to figure out how to fly these things without this major apotheum effect taking place, which would cause missing time and all the rest of it. You know, it's quite fascinating. If you go into some of the original cases where there's still good info around the UFO file, you're going to find that what they had going on were these scientists going in to these crashed craft at different times in history, and they would be experiencing very, very ill side effects. So in, you know, they figured out, oh, you can only have a scientist in there for 20 minutes at a time. That's very crucial information, because what happened, if you read some of the stories, is that you actually would get scientists going in there. Not only would they get physically ill, they would start to experience a kind of otherworldliness. They would see relatives who had passed on, for example. They would experience a whole range of psychic phenomena. They would have beings come to them and instruct them about how they've lived their life wrongly and need to improve it, and how they're going to destroy the environment. All these unusual things would happen to them when they're just going in there to do this kind of crash retrieval. So you're dealing with a totally different set and a type of technology. And in the background, what we've had is a secret program around setting up psychics to work around recovered UFO technology. This is a major piece of what they do in relation to this. And I think one of the most prominent things that have come out of it is the remote viewing program, because the people who were involved with that, and some of the best remote viewers like Ingo Swann and others, they gave us the most details about what was going on with the UFO file. And there's a guy from that program, Russell Targ, who's been on my show on a number of occasions. He set up that program, and von Braun and other psychics like Uri Geller were involved with it. And what happened was they had a very interesting guy who was a sheriff on the West Coast. His name was Pat Price. He was also one of the greatest psychics of all time. And Pat Price, what he was known to do was to look at a mug book and be able to read out which criminal did which case, and over and over again, they found these remarkable results that he would be correct. So his program, you know, this remote viewing program, heard about him, and they recruited him, and he was doing all these things, including the fact that the psychic spies network they developed through this remote viewing program saved a State Department diplomat by pinpointing his location so they could go and rescue him. I mean, this is extraordinary things that they did that we know about. So much of it has been held undercover. But Pat Price also had a Scientology connection. And when he was talking to his mentor in Scientology, he let things slip about his research into the UFO file. And they were starting to realize he had too much of a curiosity about the UFO file. And Pat Price turned up mysteriously dead. Now, it's very interesting because Stansfield Turner, who was the CIA director under Carter, actually turned out this very unusual quote at a certain point where said, yes, you know, he was asked a question about, are you using psychic remote viewers? And he answered very cagily and said, well, apparently there's some rumor that one of the psychics died. And we think that he's just gone so remote in the remote viewing that we can't find him. It was this weird flip thing about what they'll do with the psychics who go too far. But they're in the background recruiting psychics on a regular basis through university programs and being able to figure out who it is that can perform these different activities with the psychic interaction with advanced craft. Now, that's an exotic technology, but it's something they've been working on for a great deal of time. And, you know, we have things about psychics. It's kind of like a pop culture piece, which is a punchline very much at times. But what does the deeper research look like? Well, if you go back and you look at some of the major forces around that, people like Edgar Cayce, for example, you know, we still look to that information to say, how can this guy be so right over a period of time? Well, one of the things that the remote viewing group picked up was that Cayce could do all these health readings. So he would pinpoint somebody, they'd give him the address, and he would float in his mind over to Miami and pinpoint this guy and diagnose him at a distance. So this psychic diagnosis at a distance was something that they found interesting. And so they started to develop their own program about how to do this. And what happened with Cayce is quite fascinating because he not only could go into the future in his mind, he could go into the past, and he would read something called the Akashic Chronicle, which holds all of the history of humanity. And it's very interesting with Cayce because of his accuracy. So you might, you know, think about, well, you know, this psychic, that psychic, whatever. But Cayce had a demonstrated 40-year program around this. And this is what happens when you look at the mystery school aspect in relation to this. There's a point in the position, say, right around the 1920s, where these groups were coming in and giving this information out because they saw the incredible things that were headed in for humanity. So suddenly we had all of these mystery school teachers like Rudolf Steiner. And it's interesting, and I had an image of what Steiner had carved. It's actually X12, if the guys are out there paying attention, I appreciate it. That image could be really great to show. This is a very fascinating image because X12 is a photo of Ahriman. There it is. Wow, I really appreciate it. Do you notice the graphics today have been fantastic, everyone? Give these guys a hand. Unbelievable. Well, look at this. This is a carving that Rudolf Steiner, who became the leader of anthroposophy. This guy was no slouch, by the way. He's one of the greatest geniuses that Europe ever churned out. And he developed eurythmy. He developed biodynamic farming. And he had a particular aspect, which is he could view into the future. And when he viewed into the 21st century, you know, all these different people around him were saying things like, hey, humanity's going to have this wonderful future. You know, everyone's going to be in this kind of Age of Aquarius type thing. And Steiner was like, yeah, but not so much. There's a problem first. And the problem was, in Steiner's world, this Ahrimanic, in his cosmology, this Ahrimanic force coming through technology in the 21st century. Now, this is very interesting to me because of the accuracy of what he was developing. If you really look at it, virtual reality, AI, our space program are all contained there in the work of Rudolf Steiner. But this character, Ahriman, which he developed, and he actually sculpted this, and he said while he was sculpting it, he had this impression of being in immense concrete. So he felt heavy, and the whole thing was weighing on him, as it were. It's quite fascinating because the character Ahriman, and people have, you know, made claims of seeing this even around 9/11, this figure. It's very interesting. Ahriman, if you look into the history of it, is actually the name of a Persian devil, as it were. And, you know, it's Ahriman versus Ahura Mazda, and they're twins, and they fight it out, the light force versus the dark force. Well, it's very interesting to go back and look at Steiner because he's saying, look, what Ahriman's going to do is develop an eighth sphere. And the eighth sphere is basically a virtual reality realm in the 21st century. And it will interrupt humanity's spiritual evolution. And so that evolutionary path will get interrupted and people will sort of fall into this eighth sphere. So it's the idea of a false reality, AI, you know, these different things, your avatar, whatever it happens to be. And that's because in those schools, they understand the different things about the astral body, the etheric body, the causal body. These are the various things that they've already understood and explored. So the eighth sphere is something that they see as kind of an artificial version, because humanity has all that. They, you know, when we dream, we go into the astral realm, we do all these different types of things. But Ahriman, in developing the eighth sphere, is basically a high-tech version of this. And when you hear a lot of these scientists on the inside talk about the singularity and things of that nature, what they're really getting into is that they see the tree of life, which, you know, goes back to a lot of these things, all the way back to Egypt and the Kabbalah and other sources. But the tree of life, at a certain point, you have to advance, along the line and go up that and become, you assume a whole identity of being achieving a full spiritual human communion. And that is the tree of life. But what they want to do is kind of short circuit that, basically. And they take the idea that we will take the animal aspect of ourselves and merge it with the mineral, which is the technology, which is the deep chips, which is the augmented human, all of these different aspects. And the, you know, it is interesting when you get around some of these people, because you look at somebody like Musk, for example, and he's very deep in that system. And it's kind of fascinating with the other things that he's saying about, well, you know, we need freedom of speech, we need all these other things. But Ahriman is part of this whole chipping of humanity aspect. So, you know, there's a crossover here that we have to really look at when you get into it. One of the other things I want to mention, since we've kind of looked at this a little bit, is that if you look at the Casey work and the Casey psychic work, the thing that he was able to bring forward in that mystery school tradition was the Atlantean records. And this whole aspect of a hall of records that these various groups have been looking for, it's not so far out as you might think. I found out, and I have the file here in my studio, of the Central Intelligence Agency launching a program to find Edgar Casey's Hall of Records. And what they did is they took the Edgar Casey Organization, the Association for Research Enlightenment, and they actually placed people inside of it who were CIA operatives, because they wanted information around this. This is what I call archaeology wars, and it's the control of humanity's story from beginning to end, which is why there's been so much resistance to the Atlantis story. But Casey's version of it shows up this way. There are two groups. One of the groups is the Emilius group. The other group is the Belial group. The Emilius group develops incredible technology and uses it to interact with what he called the outer spheres, the saintly realm. And they set up these various people to interface with it. And so inside of Atlantis, the Belial group takes that information, they copy it, and then they realize, oh, hey, not only can these guys interact with the saintly realm, but we can, you know, use this as lasers and a power grid and all the rest. And so there a battle is staged and plays out. Casey gave this information over the period of 3 decades. And if you look at it in over 14,000 readings, there are 900 readings dealing with Atlantis. It's an extraordinary journey, and they're incredibly consistent. And what he's doing is he's going back and he's looking at that period, the last great period of human achievement, through the technology where ultimately everything got blown to smithereens. And the idea that Casey developed was that it was something called a two-eye stone, and the network around the two-eye stone, which was a large scale power system that did this. And two-eye is T-U-A-O-I. This is an unusual word that came directly out of the Casey readings. I do have a picture of this, because what happened is, let's see where we have it. What happened was there's a NASA scientist, very interestingly enough, who decided, you know, this is getting too interesting. Casey talking about this two-eye stone. I want to see a model of this. Let's go through and find the model. And what he did was he developed an actual image of what the two-eye stone would look like. And that NASA scientist, for 7 years, built different models of the two-eye stone. But the idea of the Hall of Records and the two-eye stone, that all comes from the Casey readings. And somebody, you know, when you're talking about space and advanced technology, you might think, well, you know, what does the mystery school or some psychic have to do with this stuff? Maybe a great deal, because, you know, we love to entertain, and you see programs about ancient aliens and things like that. But what if it, in fact, is human technology, that's advanced technology, we reached a point, which is far beyond our own civilization, back then, and that civilization destroyed itself, and so we're coming back in and facing up against it. And there you have it. That is the actual drawing by a NASA scientist of Casey's reading of the Two-Eye Stone advanced technology. This was the power grid in Atlantis, and it was amazing because this particular NASA scientist, when he looked at it, said, this is such erudite information coming from these guys' readings. Like, you know, this thing, we could be using this thing to launch propulsion for different space vehicles and things of this nature. So we're looking at that crisscross there about where we get information and how, in general, that information is siloed. So you have people over here who look into things that have to do more with, you know, the kind of spiritual woo psychic aspect, and it's completely segmented away from the people who are doing this hardcore kind of technological analysis. And this happens, it's very interesting, as I started the program out with the deep state players and how they don't deal with the UFO file. Well, it's a great lack, because if you can combine those things, you get an incredible potent force of knowledge and information. That's what they have behind the scenes. That's why they have remote viewers. That's why they have CIA programs to infiltrate the Casey Institute of all places. That's why you had the looting of the Baghdad Museum. And, you know, they were looking for these various ancient devices for things. It has to be an aspect that gets considered around it. I'll tell you another interesting piece related to this is, you know, when we look at that whole Nazi Arthurian piece back there, well, the Nazis were obsessed with it. As a matter of fact, they say the entire Anschluss of taking over Austria by Hitler was just so he could go into this one museum where he could get this sword of power that had pierced the side of Christ during the crucifixion. So this thing runs very, very deep. And when we see, when we get around the early versions of the mystery schools, there's these secret societies that break off from the mystery schools, and they do something totally different with the information and the knowledge. And one of the things I'll mention about Steiner is he said that at that point in 1920, when he was writing about this, that the secret societies and the mystery schools operated about 85% of the politics in America at the time. Their influence could have only increased since then. So these people are all involved either with a mystery school or with a different secret society. The question is, we have two different sides of that, you know, the right path and the left path, and those are not political designations by any stretch of the imagination. But we have to understand where these people come from, where their beliefs are, and how does that relate to what we're seeing on the ground? For example, why are you seeing the biggest black magician in history being behind the founder of NASA? You know, Jack Parsons, as we mentioned earlier. These things are incredible crossovers, and if you don't think that's enough of a crossover, then look to Scientology, where you see L. Ron Hubbard, and he's the same guy who's working with Parsons during that period. And they're sharing everything. They're living together. And, you know, so Parsons working in hand in hand with the leader of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, you have to put together, because how much influence and impact has L. Ron Hubbard had, for example, on Hollywood, on the intelligence agencies and other places? You have to be able to look and see those crossovers. That's what I call dark journalism. And I'll tell you, you don't need any fiction when you get into that level, when you look at some of these people. And another thing I want to say about Hubbard, which is quite fascinating, is he wrote he's one of the most prolific writers in history for the amount of science fiction books that he wrote. So this guy was extraordinary, and he mused to Parsons at a certain point that if he could develop a religion, it would be the greatest benefit, because he could take all of his ideas and funnel them into a religion, and also he could sort of be independent. Now, he also, I would say this other thing about Hubbard, which is he understood that the whole black magic aspect that Parsons was dealing with was the key to developing the system of Scientology. So it comes out of that OTO organization of Parsons and Crowley. And it's very interesting because there's a letter on record where Crowley is writing to Parsons, and he says about our friend, L. Ron Hubbard, look, you know, stay away from this guy. Hubbard, you know, he's a dark personality and he's immoral. Well, if you've got Aleister Crowley calling you immoral, how bad off do you have to be? So, these things do go a lot deeper. And I think when we include the psychic and the mystic aspect in this, you're opening up a tremendous veil. Now, you know, understandably, there's a lot of resistance because you have occult aspects involved. But remember, there's esoteric and there's occult. And the occult aspect tends to be locked in or locked up very often with the black magic aspect. And but how does this all play out in the power structure? Our great knowledge on behalf of the American public and beyond about how these groups work and what their foundations are is only going to open things up for us to understand how the geopolitical scene works. And these people are centered and hanging out there right in the middle. We're going to be back in the next segment. I've got more for you on Northcom, and it's great to be here with everyone on the Alex Jones Show. Of course, support Alex and his efforts, and we, of course, are very psyched to have InfoWars up and running, and it's a great pleasure to be here. I'm Daniel S., Dark Journalist. Well, it's so great to be covering this at this particular time. We are in a kind of a constitutional crisis around the drone wars going on, as we say. And, you know, sometimes that thing flares up and you can see it directly with all the swarms over the airports. And then at other times it retreats into the back, and it seems to be doing, they're testing the public quite a bit on this. But, as we saw last year with the Chinese balloon and the various shoot downs over Canada of UFOs, according to the New York Times, you know, they raise this, they get that impression. One of the key things I think that we've seen is during that period of the pandemic, when they brought in all of this COVID operation, they were rolling out these videos and things of UFOs that were brought forward by counterintelligence agencies. And the different agents had supposedly smuggled these things out. Well, let me tell you, you know, the government doesn't work like that. And these guys sitting comfortably and having television shows and stuff, there's no question. And there were a lot of DOD billionaires in the background putting these guys forward and doing that whole bit. One of the things I think that's important about the Chinese balloon story is it relates, it's like a back end directly to the drone story. And as we've seen now, the FAA has said, oh, we're going to use deadly force to shoot down drones. This is a huge shift in position from denying that anything was going on. And I really want to deliver this message to independent media around the world, which is get on board with finding out what is behind that and pressure the government to say exactly what's going on here. Don't get lazy and say, oh, it's, you know, people imagining planes or something. I mentioned Judge Napolitano earlier. It's quite interesting because he said they were hanging out over his farm. How would you like that, just to have these drones hanging out over his farm? And he said at a certain point I was looking at them, and they seemed like they were just looking back at me. It's very, very unusual things that are going on. People have been honest and on the ground. Sure, there are misidentifications here and there, but this is a massive wave. I can tell you, I've been studying this up for decades. This is very unusual, highly unusual, and is a rollout. It's a test. And the question always is, when you get around these tests, will the test go live? That's the question. Now, one of the things that I wanted to put out there, actually, is about this Doomsday Network. And the picture is actually X3, if we can put that up during the segment, that would be super. One of the things that's very interesting about this is the Doomsday Network is something now that was designed to survive a nuclear, you know, decapitation of the government at that point. Truman and Ike had put these things together, and this is the early version of COG that was going on and had a very legitimate purpose, if you think about it. What's very interesting and often missed in this development is Moon Township. Moon Township is in Pennsylvania, and for me, it is actually the original Area 51. And the things that go on, it's a very nice town, by the way. The people there are great, but the military development in the background is some of the deepest black projects that you can possibly imagine. That is the airport. It's Pittsburgh International Airport, designed after an X for a reason. It's relating directly to that X technology we've discussed in the background. The exotic technology development in Moon, Pennsylvania, this is something I suggest. I call it X geography because we need to shift things around here. They've kept us so focused on places like Nevada, saying, well, oh, Area 51 and all the rest of it. You know, the word is generally once you hear that the stuff is there, it's gone. this is the nature of it. But Moon, I think, is particularly interesting. And let's talk about this Doomsday Network and how it was rolled out. So at a certain point, this network was designed to survive a nuclear catastrophe, which was a legitimate phase of development. But just like the UFO file, the underground bunkers and the things that they developed during the Eisenhower administration are very interesting. If you look at it, you can see that concurrent with that development were all these underground bases. So you're doing this incredible development on top, and underneath you're doing this incredible development. We saw this. There were reports about the Denver airport and how they were going to use Denver as the new Washington, D.C. And while they were building up this incredible airport on top, there was all this work going on underground as well that various people and whistleblowers came out and talked about. Now, here's what's interesting for me when I get around the Doomsday Network. The Doomsday Network is used in these deep events throughout history, and their personnel is used. COG and the commanders around COG have all these underlings along the way, lawyers. You know, as a matter of fact, the original COG group contained the president of CBS, and Eisenhower selected him particularly. They didn't only want political and military people. They wanted other people. So when you see people floating around out there like Oprah Winfrey and others who are just so in with the various plans of the deep state and all the rest, it doesn't seem to make any sense, because you're like, well, they're entertainers. You know, wouldn't they stand up against this or stand up against that? Why are they all, you know, walking in lock, stock, and barrel? It doesn't make any sense. Well, there's a good reason for it. They've been promised a place inside the bunker. And this is the nature of the problem. The Doomsday Network, it's been traced through these various events. Even in the Kennedy assassination, it was utilized by a Secret Service agent named Winston Lawson, who for some reason was using the COG communications during the heart of the assassination. Now, it's very interesting. If you go further along through history, you're going to find in Watergate that John Dean had just, when he was working for the assistant attorney general, that he was just out of working for the continuity of government group. Well, you go along a little further, you're going to find Oliver North, who's running all these missiles to Iran and getting them back to Central America so they can fund these Contras and all that stuff in the 1980s with Reagan. Well, that's Reagan and Cheney and Bush and all this group. They are using what? What was it? It was determined that he was using. He was using the COG Doomsday Network. Well, why do they call it the Doomsday Network? It's quite interesting. They used the Doomsday Network on 9/11. They activated continuity of government for the first time during 9/11. That's the crucial aspect. And that's admitted even on a federal level, and even the media admits that, yes, COG was activated. So we know of one occasion where it's actually been activated. The question is, are we in COG light? We are, in fact, in COG light because we're still under the September 11th emergency, which is signed on to by every president since Bush, Bush W. Bush. And it's very interesting because the NDAA attaches it. And that National Defense Authorization Act, they've used to railroad the public and attach things into it that the public would have no interest in. Well, what they do is, since it's $1 trillion in funding for various military expenditures, you're holding up a whole lot of money if you stand up against it. So presidents from Bush, Obama, Trump, and Biden all signed the NDAA, which reauthorizes this COG program under the September 11th emergency. But the thing is, it was so well crafted by Rumsfeld and Cheney during that period that you have to look into the history of Rumsfeld. You have to look into the history of Cheney, because they were there working for Ford. Remember that, in fact, Rumsfeld was the youngest defense secretary in history working for Ford. And then he shows back up as an older defense secretary. And guess what? They're both developing in between that continuity of government program. So the COG that was designed by Rumsfeld and Cheney had one crucial link different from what was developed by Eisenhower. It changed the version of, to survive a nuclear emergencies, we'll call in this martial law and we'll do all these various things. It took that off the table and said, for any emergency. And then there was an update in 2007, which is crucial. And I think what we're seeing now in relation to the UFO file aspect of this and the UFO threat being pushed by the Central Intelligence Agency. In 2007, what they said was, any event, that causes us to go into an emergency can trigger off continuity of government. So this is the update, and it's interesting because if you go into those different files, one of the things I want to point out is that in 2023, I pointed out after doing a lot of deep research and talking to a lot of people on the inside that the program was actually called Blue, and that's the program that we've been developing over time that relates to the emergency aspect of the UFO file, i.e. if you encounter a UFO threat, the ability of the government to counter that threat by calling in martial law. The program is called Blue. That was the development. And it goes all the way back, Project Blue Book, the things you hear about Blue Beam, this whole thing about Blue Gemini under the Kennedy administration, and Blue Berets, who were the ones who were set up specifically to get crash retrievals if a UFO crashes and the military need to go in there. They need to secure the area and silence all the witnesses. That was the basic protocol until they recently changed it in 2018. Now, one of the things that they do with the Blue program is we put it on the record, and all kinds of weird things started to go on in the background. I started to notice all these stories coming out about a whistleblower is going to come forward and say this and that about the UFO file. And some of them reached out to me directly, and they said, how did you get the name in your program? Where did you get the name from? So that raised some red flags for me. And then the government came out and said, yes, we have a Blue program, but it was set up to do crash retrievals of these UFOs, but it never recovered any. So just, forget about it. And the version of it that we're willing to talk about is Kona Blue. And so there was a code associated with Kona that had to do with these previous crashes. Well, what I found out when I studied the COG aspect was that Blue is one of the color designations of the COG group. So when they take over, they have these military designations. You have the combatant commander, which is Gregory Guillo. And I have a picture of Guillo. Guillo's picture would be NORTHCOM commander X4. Guillo is quite interesting because he now would be the person who would become the total ruler of the United States in the event of a UFO emergency or a drone emergency, the drone swarm emergencies, whatever you want to call it. Certainly it's a UFO, it comes under the UFO designation or UAP as they like to do the marketing around that. Now, here's the interesting thing and what I think is crucial to put across. This is General Guillo. Guillo is now in charge of NORTHCOM, NORAD, and he's the COG combatant commander. If through the drone swarms, you triggered off a UFO threat narrative, and you could say the United States at its military bases is under siege by these drones. We don't know what they're doing. Then we need to call in the emergency forces of COG. He would become the complete ruler of the United States, and the president could take a powder. In this case, we wouldn't be missing much with President Biden. And then he holds the position, and he regulates and sets up regional governors. So, the East Coast, we get a particular governor. In the southern region, they get a governor. On the West Coast, they get a governor. And then they hold the power in place, and they sit in that position until an election can be called at some point in the future. Well, we know how that goes for other countries. Just look at Egypt. They've had a nice 14-year takeover by the military. So this situation rests there. Now, I'm not saying that they will call emergency powers and COG, but that they have the ability through that UFO threat emergency to do so. Therefore, we don't know anything about that program. You can imagine the things that go through their mind. This guy, Guillo, is being told, you're going to found a new civilization if this happens. You're going to be the person who designates, what the different groups, how to repopulate the earth and all these things. That's the place that these people are in their mind. And there's a famous example of this, actually, and it goes back to the Kennedy administration, and it's a movie called 7 Days in May, where literally a COG commander takes over. And the whole movie is about the COG commander attempting to take over because he thinks the president is weak in relation to the Russians. And Kennedy did all these things. He cleared the White House. He let the director, Frankenheimer, use the White House. He said, people need to know how things actually work. And that's a very early shot across the bow there, that movie. And there's so many interesting things, but it's the first real admission of COG being involved. Now, how does the UFO file relate to that? If you look actually in the movie, this has been called out before, in the movie, over the back of the general who is the COG commander taking over, you can see on a map Roswell, New Mexico. And I'm going to tell you how unusual that is. In 1947, when the crash happened, there was a story that went around the world about Roswell. But in fact, the story of Roswell disappeared because once they said it was a weather balloon, it was cleared out. The intelligence officer, Jesse Marcel, who found the wreckage in 1980, came out and said, yeah, I found all this stuff covered in hieroglyphics on this guy's ranch, and we couldn't do anything with the metal. It was like a strange memory metal. We couldn't burn it. We couldn't bend it. There was nothing that we could do with it. And he said it, the debris field was for miles. So they cleaned up that whole debris field. But he came out with that story in 1980. So people in 1964 didn't know anything about Roswell. It was a buried story in a local newspaper. So therefore, the knowledge of the person who put Roswell behind the COG commander shows maybe Kennedy is tipping him off and saying, by the way, this is where the basis of this is and comes from, which is the UFO technology advances our technology program. It gives them the ability to say the advanced technology is too important. Remember Robert Sarbarker, who, as I've pointed out before, has been rubbed out of history, basically. You can't even find a Wikipedia page on this guy. Sarbarker was just as big as, you know, you can imagine. They had the movie Oppenheimer last year. This guy was just as big. He was on Time Magazine, Saturday Evening Post in that period, and he was involved with Thomas Townsend Brown, who was a deep, deep Black Projects scientist who wanted to share the information with the public and actually set up UFO groups in the 1950s for that purpose. I actually spoke to his daughter and family members on many occasions, and one of the things that she told me is that he had developed something, an advanced piece of technology called the acoustic fan. And the acoustic fan basically created an orb, and it would show a person the outline of their life in the future and all the things that they would do. And that he demonstrated this acoustic fan for Curtis LeMay and other generals at the Rand Defense Corporation. And that immediately after that, he said, you know what? We're going on vacation. We're going to Eleuthera Island. And they would get there, and they would be surrounded by machine gun security guards, and they would just hold out for 8 months, like, don't do anything. Don't say anything. Well, that whole combination of the advanced technology going underground, scientists like Thomas Townsend Brown being involved, who I like to split these groups up, actually, as the group inside the government that holds the technology on the UFO side is called X-Protect. The other group is called X-Share. So it's a much smaller group, but they want to share the technology. And I think that that X-Share group was in touch and worked with President Kennedy. And I think it's throughout the ages we can see these moves for disclosure that happen. And they're always kind of – there's this piggyback operation where they take the legitimate disclosure and they try to use it for some military purpose. This is what we're seeing with the CIA threat narrative. It's undeniable what's taking place in relation to that. And the drone swarm is directly related to that UFO threat narrative. As a matter of fact, it's one of the things that we've been tracking on the Dark Journalist Show for quite a while. And that pattern that you can read so obviously relates to the fact that that technology is a higher secret, according to Sarbarker, than the atomic bomb. So this is extraordinary when you think about it. The other thing I want to say about this, if you think about the technology and the aspects around it, look, Russia is saying, we have hypersonic missiles. You guys, you know, you want to put nukes on our doorstep and all the rest of it. 1987, Reagan and Gorbachev proposed to eliminate the entire nuclear arsenal. How on earth could you eliminate the nuclear arsenal? You must have something else. It's a different weapon. And they like to talk about kinetic weapons and things of this nature. The idea of a particle beam weapon or rods of God weapon or something advanced that they've developed out of this technology would give them the ability to launch a UFO threat narrative. Here's the thing. The UFOs are obvious. They're real. They've been here throughout history. There's no question, but they've never shown any signs of threatening the public. But the idea and the fear that exists in the subconscious can be exploited by these groups inside the intelligence agencies, rolling out false whistleblowers through counterintelligence programs through Congress, as we've seen. And you have guys up there, you know, like Congressman Tim Burchett and stuff, and they want answers. They just don't know anything about the UFO file. So this is the nature of the problem. They'd like to get to the bottom of it, you know. Anna Paluna Luna, she would like to do it as the congresswoman from Florida. You just don't have enough background on the UFO file so you can be easily bamboozled, which is what happened to Nancy Mace, the congresswoman during the last UFO hearing, because the CIA runs the tables on that. Once I heard the Department of Homeland Security was the venue for the UFO hearings that took place before that, you know, you cannot have things like DHS and the CIA involved on that level because you're not going to get the truth from them. Actually, counterintelligence agencies, of what they do and the agents that are involved are the best liars on the planet. Now, sure, most counterintelligence agents do that for patriotic purpose, and I salute their efforts and their work. But I also know that counterintelligence agents around the UFO file are going to spill the best lies, and that's what we've been getting, the absolute best lies. This all relates because the continuity of government program and the illegal structure of NORTHCOM set up after 9/11 gives them the ability to initiate a complete takeover of the United States. And as I said, you're already under emergency powers. It's not even like this is, has to be some kind of far-out scenario. We just saw with the COVID op what they're willing to do. So the idea that they could launch this program and then, you know, take advantage of the idea of the drone swarms with the airports and the military bases, this gets us into a very deep angle. We need the answers before the full-on emergency takes place. That's the thing that you need to press out of the government in relation to this. And the other aspect is you have to have the greatest possible tracking of the UFO aspect in relation to this, which means you have to take the UFO technology aspect seriously, regardless of where you think it's coming from. And that's what I think that sets the difference in terms of geopolitics. So we're in a very tricky scenario because the person that we have coming into office, the president-elect, is somebody that the deep state does not want in there. And under any circumstances, look at all the different things they did to stop Trump. And, you know, I'm not saying Trump is perfect, but you can see clearly he's not deep in that gang. He has his own power base. And it's very well known that there's a whole Fortress America idea, which is different from the globalist, you know, that whole piece of an empire aspect. The people who are running the war in Ukraine against Russia, that is the empire building stage. Well, what we have is totally different. And on the Trump side, it is America first, and it's all about the foundation of America, the Constitution, and all the rest. So even regardless of the different problems you might have with this or that person in the administration, this is much more aligned with constitutional principles than the freak show we've been living under for the past 4 years. So, you know, they're moving into it becomes common to the idea of them getting rid of free speech, the definition of a woman, whatever it happens to be. These are aspects that are prepping the narrative. And then when you bring in, it's not divorced from all that. It's right in the heart of it. The UFO technology aspect that's been kept secret, that's operated by black budget groups, and that they roll out here and there when they want to, when those breakaways feel like, you know, this is the time to break in and give some of that technology out or demonstrate some of that. It's right in the heart of these things. That's why I think the deep state research and the UFO research comes together so, so well. And it's very difficult because you have to say to yourself, if you're a genuine researcher, I'm looking at the UFO file. I'm looking at the psychic, mystical aspects involved with this because they are. And I'm also looking at the deep geopolitical deep state actors. So you need to start to look at how they're prepping the narrative, and you need to use all those different levels. And I do feel like, you know, when you're looking at this, one of the greatest examples, of course, I think I have it here, is this would be maybe – oh, shoot. Let's see. Oh, it's X-10. This is one of the classic, most classic cases around this. And as we segment out here for the show, it's been fantastic to be here with you. I think the UFO aspect around this is absolutely fascinating, but also the way they're using it is extremely dangerous. And, you know, there are aspects involved here. That picture right there was drawn by the most famous abductee, and it is called Junior. This is the being that abducted Betty Hill. And she had long conversations, telepathic conversations with this while she was being examined. This is another part of the apotheum that takes place. And all the missing time that was involved in that case when she got around this being, all these hours would disappear. They'd land back in their car. Well, there are all these reports out of New Jersey that all the people watching the drones are losing time you know, there's all the reports about flickering lights in all these states where the drones go over. Is that an apotheum effect? Are they working aspects of that apotheum effect? These are the crucial questions. So we're going to get into it more on the show, of course. I'm Dark Journalist. You can go to my YouTube channel and also on X. It's Dark Journalist. It's been great to be here with you, a great honor to be here with the InfoWars crew. And for Alex, of course, please get behind what Alex is doing here on this program. He, again, is the architect of the independent media, and we all appreciate him. And we will see you all. I'll see you tomorrow night, and I hope everyone has a fantastic, fantastic weekend.